I just love so much that Leslie Headland was specifically like, no, I'm going to get a well-rounded group of people in here and we're going to fucking talk it out because this is going to be good. I want have ideas to communicate and not necessarily like dicks to suck and asses to lick, okay?
Put that in our trailer. Welcome to The Good, The Bad, and The Batch. I'm Julia.
And I'm Becca.
We're best friends and lifelong Star Wars fans, and this is a Star Wars narrative analysis podcast.
It sure is. And this time we're narratively analyzing The Acolytes.
Damn, that was beautiful.
You're welcome.
Wow.
I don't know what I said.
You're welcome.
You're welcome for me. Anyway.
Co-host.
Boy, howdy, this show's got a lot of mixed reviews.
Just right off the bat.
Yeah, I'd like to acknowledge that.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about it here at the beginning. I think it's actually kind of fascinating how mixed the reviews are on this.
Yeah.
I think most of the time on Star Wars shows, reviews are pretty mixed. Like, I would say generally positive, somewhat mixed.
But it's kind of funny because, like, I mean, you and I are of the same opinion about, like, shows like The Mandalorian, where, like, there's, like, severe holes in it, and, like, there's a lot of issues with it.
Fans really.
No, but,
show.
Like, overwhelmingly, for until, like, the third or fourth season, I think, came out, like, even, like, your coworkers were like, it's a good show, it's great. Yeah. And then they were like, actually, I think you're right. But the whole time, we've been like, no, there's some issues with it.
I feel like, and we don't need to get into this, but, like, I will say, like, I think The Mandalorian started off, you know,
yeah,
pretty all right with an interesting thought. And then, like, it didn't fulfill what it promised, no. Right? But, yeah, no, it's really interesting that, like, I think generally, I mean, and this is from my perspective, I'm sure it's actually not true because I'm starting to think of things, but, like, I feel like across the board, it's, like, Star Wars shows are generally liked. They put a lot of time and effort into them and, like, you know, I feel like they have good costuming generally and, you know, whatever. They have cool special effects. So, like, there's always, like, something someone likes.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that conversation obviously changes when it comes to any show that features women.
There it is.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
Surprising no one, The Acolyte, which has a lot of, I wouldn't say, like, a lot of women, but the main characters are both women and they are both specifically black women, is apparently too divisive.
Yeah. I also feel like it was really, at its inception, was marketed as a female-centric show, which, like, I understand. I don't know that that's... I have conflicted feelings on, like, marketing shows like that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously, I am all about, like, shows or movies or stories that, like, do center, like, women or women-presenting people.
Yeah.
But, like, I feel like when you off the bat say that, it's like... Well, first of all, why don't you let your show speak for itself?
Yeah.
Like, I think in interviews it's fine to be like, you know, I wanted to include more, like, women and female, like, attitudes or, like, I don't know, whatever. But, like, I think you immediately alienate a lot of people that unfortunately, like, I'm not saying that they should be coddled, but also, like, I feel like you're getting yourself off to a bad foot here with, like, a majority of people. And there are going to be people and specifically men that hate anything that has any... central woman in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard because it's like, I don't think that this show falls flat as far as, like, being female centric. I think that's true. But, like, until we don't have to say, like, this one's female centric and it's just like this because it has a female main character.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it's an
interesting conversation because we talked about this in our Ahsoka episode, which, you know, it was definitely flavored maybe a little bit differently in that episode just because it was another show that was like, this one, it has women in it and they're strong, but also we didn't necessarily do a great job with it. So it's kind of a tricky conversation. It's like, and we have this, we talked about this, like, chicken or the egg, like, do people not like it because... it has women, or are we not putting in a lot of effort into it? And that's, like, because it has women, because we don't think it's going to do well because the majority of the fan base is men. And, like, you know, it's just a weird, really, really tricky conversation to have because it's like with this show, it's like, it's not even really dominated cast wise by women.
No. And that's the silly thing. Like, that's why I think it's so funny. And I think it's true that people generally do just, like, they are harder and they are more ready to criticize shows that have women in them.
Yeah.
Because I would say that Ahsoka probably has more female-centric main characters, heroes and villains, than this show does.
Yeah.
And, like, I I think that this show is getting a huge amount of undeserved hate.
Yeah.
Because I think it is better written and it is better plotted and 100%. It was better a lot of things than Ahsoka, which again, the point is not that they're women. It's that it's a...
If
you want to listen to our issues with Ahsoka about the plot and characters and whatnot, go listen to our episode. But like, this show, I think, was like leagues better.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot more than I did Ahsoka. I think like, I mean, but it's, and it's for, I mean, again, we are wanting to, regardless of how many, you know, gender identities are in it, it's like, does it create a story?
Does it tell a good story?
Does it fulfill its promises and its premise? Like, you know, that's sort of in our Ahsoka episode too, what we were trying to get at. But like, I think Acolyte I enjoyed a lot more. And also like, I think I liked the characters more, which is, again, I think kind of a huge disappointment with Ahsoka. Surprisingly though, a lot of people that I work with really even like Ahsoka better than a lot of other Star Wars properties. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, I just didn't enjoy it. But I think I do have a lot of biases when it comes to like those characters. Yeah, I think it's the conversation of like specifically marketing and gearing shows like quote towards women, I feel like has this really weird effect because you're trying to be woman positive, but what you're doing is actually like saying, like allowing people to alienate women by sequestering them to shows about women instead of shows that feature women being for everyone and represented as such.
I think that this show is a really good example of a show that like it is very like, I think the characters are really well crafted and it tells a good story. And I would say that it is extremely universal.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I mean, the reason is misogyny, but like,
and racism.
And racism. Yeah. Like people just are looking past the, like they're looking at it through a specific lens, but I think because it was like marketed towards that. I guess, I don't know if it's fair to say it was marketed towards women.
It feels like it was the sort of
someone literally
the show
just said, it's a female-centric cast or like whatever story. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that being said, I think I enjoyed it.
I like the show a lot.
I mean, specifically what I really liked about it is what I like that it said about the Star Wars universe.
Yes.
Like, I like that we're getting something that's like a different, it's finally fucking different than everything we've gotten.
Yeah.
Which like is obviously,
except for like Rogue One, maybe.
Beef that we specifically have and talk about like a lot is just like, I'm so tired of like essentially the same plot lines. I think in the eras we, or the properties we generally talk about, it's, I'm so tired of this fucking Jedi plot line because, you know, historically we've talked a lot about stuff that's happened during the sort of Clone Wars era, right? So it's like, you know, it's the only thing people talk about instead of like actual other like perspectives, which is why I like Bad Batch. But I like this show in that it like presented to us something different. And I think like it was able to take a lot of like I haven't read the High Republic books or the comics, but like from what I understand, like an interesting time period that's like definitely different, but like is supposed to be the origins of like what we all know and understand the Jedi to be. And I think they did a really cool job at like presenting new information and doing sort of a fresh take that is both familiar but, you know, new. And I really liked that. I thought the show like did that really well.
No, I super appreciate the like fresh perspective we're getting. I feel like I was able to be like, oh, okay, let me just like tune into this as like a fan of story and a fan of characters. Because I know very little about this era of time that this show takes place in. But I mean, obviously it's still the same universe, so I feel like I'm able to like put things together. And like, I don't think that we're going to talk about the show director and showrunner Leslie Headland more, but like I think that it was a really good idea. I mean, I think she pitched this show to Kathleen Kennedy.
Yeah, I believe so.
But I think it was a really, really wonderful like idea to bring her aboard and be like, because like I don't think she's like, she's not your Dave Filoni or like, I don't know. I mean, I know what Jon Favreau's like relationship to Star Wars was before The Mandalorian. I don't think he was like a big Star Wars like contributor.
Didn't work in Star Wars previously.
But at the same time, like everything that he's made is very like classic old school kind of like understanding of Star Wars. Does that make sense?
Kind of.
The Mandalorian isn't anything surprising. It doesn't, I don't feel that it really adds anything to like the greater Star Wars world as far as like an understanding of the other movies through it or the other shows through it. Whereas like this, like Leslie Headland literally came into this show being like, how do we explain how the Jedi were like so blinded by the dark side by the time we get to like our episodes 1, 2, 3, you know, that obviously lead to this great loss to the Empire, right? Yeah. Like, I think that's a really interesting question, because it's like, yeah, how does this great order of people who are like supposed to be good and powerful and wise, how do they fall so like prey to this?
Yeah.
So I think that's a really interesting like addition to the Star Wars universe that I think people have their theories on, or like have certain like, you know, it's of the vein of like, oh, well, if you just look at this way, and if you add these two things together, and if you read this book and you do that, like it makes sense, or you can have this theory.
Yeah.
And it's like, I like that this person is like, no, let's try to answer it like philosophically, like within the world.
Yeah.
I thought that was really a good thing for this, like for the Star Wars world itself.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it was just like, I don't know. It's just, we talk a lot about, I think, and we've had this opinion for a long time, the understanding of like, hey, maybe the Jedi aren't really like the good guys. And like,
yeah.
I do think, obviously, I mean, we were talking about this before we started recording, but like that does come up in like Clone Wars episodes.
But it's always from the perspective of like the villains, yeah, or like the Separatists, or like the bad guys.
At the end of the day, the Separatists are still the bad guys.
At the end of the day, you can justify the questioning of the Jedi as like, oh, well, that guy, they just didn't like us, or they were like fully support, not like unsupportive to us. And so, like, of course they're going to have that opinion. It's like, well, they're a little valid. Let's talk about that more.
Yeah. It's like, I liked how in the Jedi Who Knew Too Much, the Ahsoka like exit episodes in season 5 of Clone Wars kind of, I think, get into that more.
Yes.
Where it's like, it is kind of her, like, she leaves because she's like, you guys didn't trust me, and you should have, and you didn't, and that fucking sucks.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like we get more into the nitty gritty of like the political atmosphere of like where the Jedi have gotten to at that point, like in essentially the Clone Wars. But I don't feel like we ever really like have a lot of time to unpack the thought that like, I actually, not to be Anakin about it, but like maybe the Jedi are evil, you know, like
from my perspective, the Jedi are evil.
But it's like, and again, like I actually think it kind of, even with Anakin being a little doofus about it, like it does present another interesting facet of like, Anakin, you're not right, because what you're talking about is fascism.
your solution to the problem is wrong.
Is bad
because it's
problem.
Worse.
Yeah.
But you're on the right train.
Yeah, but it's like, and we talked about this kind of when it came to like Tales of the Empire and Barriss's story and all of this stuff, where it's like, you're not wrong that the Jedi are doing fucked up shit. And like, they're not the good guys. They are kind of on the wrong side of history, because they are just conquering places and like, but under the guise of being the good guys, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, they're kind of colonizing a lot of worlds.
Oh, they definitely are.
Under the guise of like, well, it's us or those fuckers
exactly.
over there.
Under
so
the
wouldn't
guise
you
of...
rather have us? Yeah. No, fully.
It's giving early America.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, again, the answer to that is not do a terrorist attack and blame it on your friend. Like,
yeah.
That's not the solution.
Yeah,
here.
No, it's like, so I feel like we've always really liked, or at least I'll speak for myself, I've always really liked in that sort of era,
yeah,
the fact that like, hey, let's flip this on its head and see like, these actually aren't the good guys, they're actually just like a huge giant essentially religious faction that's deciding things
and
waging
war
on people.
There are good people within it. There
yeah.
are also people that are taking advantage of the
yeah.
power that they have. Like, there's a lot, like, I feel like we lacked a lot of nuance between like the
yeah.
light side and the dark side, or whatever.
Going back to a previous point, like, was a very old school Star
yeah.
Wars way of thinking, which I
for
think
sure.
there are some fun things about the original Star Wars that obviously like I would like to retain. I like that it's
mm-hmm.
kooky. I
mm-hmm.
like that it's like campy and weird and like, you know, but obviously I think the storytelling wasn't like in the original, like in A New Hope, in the original Star Wars, I don't think the storytelling was supposed to be exactly like the star of the show. It was like the world that they had created.
Well, because the storytelling is just, it's just a hero's journey,
it's,
right?
Like, it's just regular.
Rinse and repeated, like.
Archetype.
Which is fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. And especially in like 1977, where it's like, this was a very new
yeah.
thing. Like, it's a good, the hero's journey is a good vessel for this new fangled world.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But I think we've kind of, I mean, we were talking about this the other day, we've come so far in the Star Wars universe that like, you can't have a vessel of a story, you have
yeah.
to have like a full story.
Yeah.
And I think
we
like,
need some more novelty,
adding nuance okay. adding novelty to things is really the way to go. And I really like that Acolyte did that, like, because I think we right, like, I mean, like what you're saying, we're adding a reason as to how the Jedi have gotten that far by the time we see them in like the Clone Wars era, and like, it makes a lot of sense. And I like that we see them as like, you know, not the good guys in this. We're seeing them as like, ooh, you guys did some problematic fucked up shit.
We're seeing them as like the bloated institution that they have become. I mean, they're experiencing like that. I mean, I guess that's why it's called the High Republic, but it's like they're at the height of their power. They have like almost unchecked like political power.
100% unchecked political power.
And it's like, and without the idea of the Sith up against them, like they're challenged by no one. Like they are the top predator in the food chain.
Effectively an unbalanced system, which I think is really interesting when it comes to this is the origin of the Sith.
Yeah.
And inevitably, the way that we understand the Force to work is something that will always balance back out. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, and I'm just now talking out of my ass, but I kind of just realized this, where it's like, it is actually kind of really interesting that they are at the height of their power and the height of their arrogance, essentially.
Yeah.
And what comes out of it is a thing that they will be diametrically opposed from for the rest of time.
For like, yeah, it's for like at least 100
years. You essentially
years,
have something to keep you in check.
Yeah.
And as much as it sucks, that's the balance, right?
Well, that's, I mean, that's true to the lore of the world, right? Like,
the mechanics of the universe.
Yeah, yeah, you're gonna come up with your magic system. You gotta have rules for it. You gotta follow those rules. You can't just be pulling shit out of nowhere.
Yeah. So I really like this show.
I'm really impressed that, like, and it just goes to show you that if you follow good storytelling or like understand, like learning the lore of the world and then putting that into the perspective of like, what's a good story? How do we get from one place to the other? I think Leslie Headland did an amazing job taking all of that information and boiling it into like this pretty cogent plot and like story that makes sense and answers and adds a lot to the Star Wars universe. I'm very impressed.
Yeah, no, I think it was like, again, like lore wise, a really great show. I really liked it. There's definitely like some critique I have. I don't have like ton of critique, but I overall think it's also really interesting like how people have received the show, because like I said earlier, there's been like a lot. I can use this to segue quickly into I put a little poll up on our Tumblr. If you're wanting to look at it, it's our Tumblr is at the Batch Pod.
It should be up for like another couple
you can
days
vote in it for the
want
next 5 days. Well,
use
tomorrow,
it as a vessel
days
to share your thoughts in the tags. We'd love to hear them.
Yeah, and like even after it closes, like you know, it'll still be up, so you can share your thoughts with us. But I thought it was really interesting because I wanted to gauge like who was a Star Wars fan and your general opinion on it, who was not a Star Wars fan and your general opinion on it, because I feel like I've had like coworkers talking about this who are like either really into Star Wars or like meh about Star Wars. We've heard from someone who's
like one of our high school friends. Yeah. Literally, I was talking to her the other day and she was like, oh yeah, like my husband, I watched it with my husband and I really liked it. And she's not like a big Star Wars person. Yeah. I don't know if she's seen, like, she's probably seen the movies, but it's not like a Star Wars fan, I would say.
So I feel like this show kind of had an interesting draw that I kind of wanted to see what was people's general thoughts and feelings on it. But anyway, so I put up a poll, and it's actually really interesting because I feel like, so at 52% is the most is Star Wars fan who loved Acolyte, mm-hmm. and then the second would be Star Wars fan meh about Acolyte, mm-hmm. and then the third is not a Star Wars fan loved Acolyte. So I actually think there's like quite, I mean, this is obviously a skewed
not
sample
a great
size.
Sample size,
I mean,
but
it's like 114 people, which
but
is
it's
more
what
than
we
I thought
have,
yeah.
So
it's a small, you know, part of the community, and obviously there's an option where it'd be like, I'm not a Star Wars fan and I didn't like Acolyte, and it's like, who's
why are you
who's
here
choosing that? But you know, I felt like, you know, put it on there in case someone
for
wants
balance,
to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's actually like pretty much there was answers in every single one of those categories except for the bottom one, which is again like, why would you be voting in this if you don't care about Star Wars? What are you doing here? But thank you. But yeah, no, it was like, it's actually fairly mixed. And like, it is definitely weighed more towards generally people liking it or being meh to liking it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting that it does seem like this show has been pulling in more people.
I think so.
I think because it's not so reliant on so much fucking Star Wars
knowledge.
It's
a news story. You like, and I said this before we talked to anybody about it as we were watching it. I was like, I really think that if you didn't have any Star Wars knowledge previously, this is still like a story that could be universally understood to you. Like, if you just have an understanding of, like, you know, how to see these characters. And like, I don't know. It removes the, like, Star Wars glasses, I think.
Yeah. I think, like, the entry point is, like, a lot more accessible.
I really do think it's, like, the antidote to the, like, Marvel cinematic universification of fucking everything.
Yeah, I mean,
and granted, I think like Star Wars was one of the first properties to start doing that, which is really funny that like now we're kind of getting this antidote from Star Wars.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about why I think
that
was the case for this show, that it was a little more universal than like having all this fan service of like, well, this is really only for people who have liked Star Wars since birth.
Everything like about Star Wars.
For sure. Like we talk a lot about in the show about having the importance of having a writer's room and fucking one man writer syndrome and all that stuff. And like, I feel like Kathleen Kennedy and Leslie Henlon were like, we see you. And here's this gift of like, we had a writer's room that had, I'm reading from the Wikipedia page of The Acolyte, and it says Henlon made sure to group included writers with different relationships to Star Wars, including some who were only fans of the original trilogy, some who were specifically fans of Dave Filoni's Star Wars projects, and one writer who had never seen Star Wars before. I cannot overstate the importance of having an incredibly balanced writer's room.
Yeah.
If Ahsoka had had a writer's room like this, if Mandalorian had had a writer's room like this, I think we would have gotten like 10 out of 10 shows across the board.
Yeah, I just think like, I mean, we keep talking about like the antidote for things, but like the antidote for like writing hubris of just like, well, I can do this myself.
Is, no, you
like,
can't.
No.
No one can.
No. Especially,
this isn't like, a book you're writing.
Yeah,
like, this is a show. It is a collaborative effort from the fucking beginning.
Production, right? I was like, you need to have people who have different opinions, and like, or just any people. But like, it helps when, and I think this was so clever and so like such a good idea of being like, we need to get people who are not only interested in different eras of Star Wars and have different feelings about that, but also people who don't give a fuck about Star Wars. Like, because
we're just
going to bring people in. Like,
well,
what's
and also that's a great person to be like, does this story make sense?
Yeah.
Does it make sense? Does it draw you as someone who is like unaffected by Star Wars?
Yeah.
Is it still a good story? Can you still look at it and be like, yeah, that makes sense?
I wish, like, I don't know if this is true, but like, if this would be true, but like, I feel like if you had a writer's room for Mandalorian, we wouldn't have ended up with fucking Deus Ex Machina on Deus Ex Machina. Like, it's just...
No.
It's just
again,
so...
it would have been a much better show across the board.
Can I tell you, sometimes I reference Luke Skywalker coming in and fucking shit up for no reason. My coworkers look at me like I'm crazy. I'm like, do you guys like this? I don't know. They've not told me. Not at least recently.
Well,
but
what's funny is that, like, I remember watching season two of The Mandalorian and that happening and everyone losing their collective
shit
about it. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, he's cool, I guess. Like, I don't dislike Luke Skywalker as a character, but like, what the fuck is he doing here?
What's so wild too is like when we keep getting off on this tangent, we don't have to continue. But what's so funny is that we watched season two of Mandalorian together. Because it was the height of the Coco times.
I've never heard it called that.
But what did we... Oh, personal pan pizza. And et cetera. But we were watching it together. And I feel like there are some moments in season two that we enjoyed. That were interesting character moments. And then you fucked it in the end. And I immediately lost interest. I was like, this sucks. Like, this... You can't... Because your stakes are fucked up, right? Like, and we talk about
fully,
this all the time.
Because now... Anything in the future is just like, well, I don't know why you didn't just have Luke Skywalker come in and fix everything.
He's the world's handyman now. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But that being said, I think you can make better plot decisions when you are working on things collaboratively, which sounds insane to say because it's like, that makes sense. That's stating the obvious.
You would fucking think.
And the sky isn't blue, but like, you know, you get it.
And listen, again, we're not saying this because we don't like Dave Filoni. Again, we've been fucking Dave Filoni fangirls since high school, since the fucking beginning. So like, this is not a judgment on him, but like, it's a judgment on the hubris of man.
I think so.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just,
I just love
so much that Leslie Henlon was specifically like, no, I'm going to get a well-rounded group of people in here and we're going to fucking talk it out because this is going to be good. I want have ideas to communicate and not necessarily like dicks to suck and asses to lick, okay?
Put that in our trailer. Yeah, I know. I just like, and again, I think like having a writer's room, having even like a showrunner who's a woman, like I think just we're getting some different opinions here. And I think
not
also,
only are
like,
we getting women in the show, but they are running the show.
Yeah.
And a lot of these writers, I'm assuming, I mean, they have like traditionally female names. I'm not going to make a judgment on anyone's
gender identity,
but it seems like there's a good smattering of different genders. in here.
Love that. I don't know. I feel like this show knew what it wanted to be. And there are some points in it where I think maybe it got a little muddled, but I think overall I enjoyed it because I feel like it said, this is what we're setting out to do, and they did it.
And they did it for the most part.
It, again, gets a little muddled, have to recalibrate at some point, but like I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Do we want to transition into plots?
Yeah, let's use that to transition into plot. Okay, so an interesting thing happening on this one, which is that I think we have slightly different opinions.
Doesn't happen often, but no. Our opinions do quite diverge.
And
on
to
this.
Be fair, I will readily admit up front is because I have sort of a semi-emotional opinion on something. Surprising literally no one.
That's fair.
But I think I was not in general super jazzed by like the middle mm-hmm. of this.
Yeah.
I think it started off really well. Like, I enjoyed the characters, the plot that we are introduced to. I like this kind of mystery of what happened on Brendok like a billion years ago. I like that we are kind of like seeing different characters. I like that we have a character who left the Jedi Order.
Yeah.
But not for Sith reasons.
Yeah.
Because they don't exist at that point. But yeah. like, you know, not because they're a shit person. Just yeah. because they're like, I couldn't do this anymore.
Yeah, exactly. They tapped out.
Yeah. And like, I just think... like Osha and May as characters are really interesting. Like I liked that we are introducing like another group that had a connection to the Force in a different way than we had seen before. Like they're not the Witches of Dathomir. They are kind of like a coven of witches, but different. I like that they had their own like mythos essentially and mm-hmm. understanding of the Force. I like how we introduced like this era of the Jedi, right?
Mm-hmm.
What I didn't love is I feel like I started out in this show in the mindset that it was going to be very character driven.
Mm-hmm.
And then halfway through the show, a bunch of the characters get killed off. And that was kind of disappointing to me.
Mm-hmm.
I did see this come up in the poll comments a lot where there are some folks who are like, they killed off characters before I really got to enjoy them, and I didn't really like that. I understand the reasons why that happened. I think the beef I have with it is that I didn't like where it fell, I think, in the progression mm-hmm. of things. And I also, like, to be more specific, sorry, do you remember the planet name that they're on? The trees planet?
Kofar.
Yeah, so like when they're like specifically when they're on Kofar, like I like the stuff that's happening. I like the fights with Khmer. I like the cool, like, I don't know. It's just, it's great. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I wasn't jazzed about, specifically Jekki is the one character that I'm very on the fence about. Like Yord makes sense to me why he would be offed. Jekki is hard because I feel like we started establishing her character and I don't think we got enough time with her for me to understand why we needed to kill her off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I get it in my brain. I get that was for another character, but I feel like the camera was a little bit too much on her.
Mm-hmm.
But also,
it's interesting because like
I'm talking too much in a row. So you start talking also so we can bounce off each other.
No, I actually like, I think it's really interesting and I feel the same way about like, I feel the same way about that character where I thought I really liked her and I would like to see more of her. But I think that's the point.
Yeah.
Of like, she was killed prematurely.
Yeah.
Because, and then right in front of Sol, who
yeah.
really needed to like have that moment of like, I have fucked so many people's lives up because of my actions.
Yeah.
And like, he's wrestling. I mean, he's like a very morally ambiguous character. I think a lot of characters in this series are, which is really cool. But he needed to like have another like basically like blow to his character essentially.
Yeah.
Because I think Jekki's what, his second Padawan after Osha, or like
yeah.
first Padawan after Osha. And like, this is what his character needed. I think that's like, I remember we were just talking about it and you were like, well, I wish they would just kind of like characterize them less than if they're just going to kill them. I'm like, but that kind of defeats the
yeah,
purpose
then it's a-
of the audience feeling like, oh shit, like that hurt me too.
Yeah.
To see that happen.
Again, this is why I think it's important to talk about the sort of like, I thought this was good, but I didn't like it, or I didn't like this and I thought it was bad sort of divergence.
Yeah.
But it's hard because I'm okay with characters getting killed off if it like, I don't know what it is about this. Maybe I was just sort of like flabbergasted that they would do that. Because again, I was like, this is a very character driven show because it's Star Wars and Star Wars tends to be pretty character driven.
It has, except for like the original trilogy.
Except for those because the characters were archetypes and it's fine.
Yeah.
And this was hard because it's like, yeah, I totally agree that like characterizing someone less and just having like a cardboard cutout of a character is like, well, of course they're going to die. Like it feels very
like when they
whatever.
Got off the ship on Kofar with like their bevy of other Jedi who are unnamed.
Star Trek red shirts.
Yeah, basically, they might have just had to just sign on them, just like, I will Jedi. Die yeah. in the next episode. Like,
gonna
yeah,
be
fully.
Dead. Yeah.
I'm a Gundy. Yeah,
yeah, I'm a Gundy.
But no, I think that, like, that was a little bit of a little red herring that was supposed to kind of throw you off and be like, oh, yeah. So they brought all these other canon fodder characters because we don't know their names and there's just fucking 80 of them.
Yeah.
So, like, they're going to die and then our main character will be fine.
I
think it was such a fun switcheroo of, like, nope, they're also going to die. But I appreciate that their deaths were, like, a little more front and center.
Yeah. I just, like, I am so conflicted about it because I feel like it's simultaneously, like, I totally in my head understand why this happened. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand that it pushed a character to an ending we needed to see. But it also kind of feels like a huge waste to me to make a character that I feel like, based on what I've seen on Tumblr, is pretty well liked.
Yeah.
You made a good character and then you're like, anyway, so they are just canon fodder. And I'm like, that feels kind of shitty
I wouldn't describe Yordan and Jackie as canon fodder. I think their deaths had specific meaning. I think the other people that they brought were clearly like, I don't know you, and like, you are just gonna die here.
Yeah, I it's weird to me because it's almost like I would have preferred if there weren't those additional just people there who we knew were gonna get killed. Like, if it was just Yord and Jackie and they died and maybe we had some more time with I don't know, like, it feels like they kind of got lumped in maybe with the canon fodder Jedi and felt a little weird because it's like, oh yeah, of course those guys are going to die because we don't know them. But like, then also these named characters, I don't know. Like, it just feels like slightly weird to me. And again, like, obviously this is I liked this character a lot and I think it's kind of a shame to just like kill him for another character. Mm-hmm. And I don't think putting less time into their character development would have helped that. I'm almost like, I wonder if more time would have been helpful. The other thing I have is I feel like putting that smack in the middle of the show, because I think it's literally like the fourth episode or something like
it
that.
It is. Oh, it's the fifth episode.
Oh, yeah. Out of eight. Yeah. Felt kind of weird. Like, I would have maybe like, maybe we could have more time to understand the relationships or like the kind of like what these characters see in each other and then understanding like why her death, I don't know, makes a little bit more sense. I don't know if that's something that would be reflected better like in Soul's writing after that. The sort of after that mark is where I think in my brain the plot gets like a little muddled. A
little bit, yeah.
So I wonder if maybe it's the after that could have helped bolster that as something that like made a little bit more sense.
You're saying you would rather have Jackie's death after this episode where everyone else dies? Or?
No, I'm just saying like if you pushed things down the line a little bit. Like if this happened slightly later in the show and then, or maybe with Soul's writing after that happens, have it be like a little bit more
of
apparent.
Yeah.
That there is, yeah, an impact there. Because I think legitimately all we get from him is him like radioing the Jedi and being like, everyone died. I mean, like, he's like upset about it, obviously, but he's not upset in the way that I feel like you should be when you see like your kid get killed.
It's hard because it's like, how emotionally constipated are these Jedi right now? And
what's
still?
Wild is it feels like they're less.
It does feel like they're less.
And especially Soul, right? Who has, we find out, been fucking about with stuff like that for kind of a while. Like, he just kind of does let his like whims control his actions.
Guide him a little more, yeah.
But it's like, I kind of wish, like, because the point of that essentially was to push Soul to be like more essentially kind of unhinged, or like things start falling apart and he grasps on to a decision he made that is fucking everyone's life so hard at that point. But I don't necessarily feel like we always see that in his character. Like, he does kind of start doing things that are like a little erratic, but I'm like, I want maybe a clearer view of like this thing, the death of all these people pushed you over the edge and now you're doing some stuff that you shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
Or you're like a little bit too gung-ho about like a mistake you made, essentially.
Yeah.
I don't know. So like maybe like the support there around those character deaths need to be like a little amped up. I don't, again, logically hate that it happened. Emotionally, I do. And that's fine. But I don't know. Yeah, I just like, I think I liked the character too much. And to me, it feels a little bit like a waste. But also, like, what's the solution for that? I don't know. But yeah, that was my sort of.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like that's obviously like a valid opinion. I was actually really impressed by the balance of developed characters who, I mean, I think I got the sense pretty early on. Like, once they arrived on Kofar, I feel like I was like, I think these characters are going to die. Like, I don't think this is going to end well for them. And I think that's exactly, or I don't think this is going to end well in general. Because, like, once you start putting together that Khmer is...
Which we figured out very quickly. Yeah.
I was like, why is he here? And I was like, oh, you know what?
You're telling me you just have some guy that hangs around?
Yeah. Which, like, I don't know. To me, this is a great example to me of good foreshadowing. Because I think it's simultaneously not obvious enough where you're immediately like, I looked at him and I knew that he was the bad guy. It's a little obvious, but not like so much.
Yeah, I think his sort of general attitude we see him with first is a little disarming. I think
as you're trying to put together the deals of these other characters, I like that we start with a big cast and it kind of gets funneled down to like literally like two characters. Like your brain's kind of working and you're trying to put together the relationships between these other characters and the like, okay, so, you know, we have our good guys and their allies, and then, you know, we have May, and okay, she has this one guy who she's like, you know, helping her out, and he somehow knows her master as well. And like, I think, and then as you're moving down the line, you're like, oh, okay, like he's maybe offering a little too much knowledge. Like, why does he know all this shit? Who is he? We haven't gotten a good explanation.
Weird things.
He's saying weird shit. We haven't had any specific explanations as to how he knows this. Like, it's also a mystery to May. Like, she's also like, why do you know this? And like, how do you, like, so I think if she weren't distracted by like learning that Osha was still alive, she probably would have figured it out as well. But, you know, so I think this is a really good example of foreshadowing, because it gets your audience to figure it out like almost kind of immediately before it happens.
Yeah.
And then I think as you're figuring that out about Khmer, you're also coming to the realization that like, shit, they're kind of all stuck on this planet with him. They don't know he's coming. They don't know anything about this. Like,
yeah, they don't even know this guy exists.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm like, oh shit, things are. And then like, I think it really sent home to me that like, this was going to end extremely poorly for a lot of people when May goes in to like turn herself into Kelnaka and he's dead.
Yeah.
Like, no, that to me was like immediate, like, shift.
I mean,
and I was like, oh shit. Okay.
When the perspective changes, right?
Yeah.
Because that's like the huge character change with May, too, right? Is she's like so terrified of this Sith guy that she's like, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to turn myself into the Jedi because it doesn't matter. And like, my sister's alive, so whatever.
Yeah.
And then, having it be like, well, the thing that you wanted was so close, but so far away because he got there before you.
Yeah.
Like, I think that was really cool. And again, like, I think that adds like a sort of like ominous edge to things. Mm-hmm. I just like, to me, that feels like, I think it's like hard because I don't necessarily have like an easy fix for this based on the story. But it's like, that felt more important to me in the general plot, so it feels like it should have been like later, almost. Like, I don't know how to explain that, but also like, there's a lot of things that happen in the second half of this show, like a lot, so it's hard to it's hard to parse where. I don't know, I'm not exactly right here, I can tell, but
you're not exactly what
right on the money on this one. Like, there's, I don't know how to formulate this to not fix it, but it's like, I don't know exactly how to express.
You're like, there's like, something missing.
You there's feel something missing here that I can't really parse that maybe I would have done differently. I think it's good. I like it. I like the bones of it, but I'm like, what is here that like would make this maybe feel slightly better to me? Who knows? Maybe there's not an answer. I don't really know.
No, I can understand that. I think the reason that like Yord and Jeki dying was like needed and important, especially in the way that it happened, was because like, I think as the audience realizes who Khmer is, like just before the rest of them realize the danger of Khmer, like we get a display of power that is very emblematic of like the Sith that we know that they're kind of just finding out about. And I think if like he had just killed all of the other cannon fodder and none of the people that they that like the audience had actually grown to care about, I think that it would have been I think it would have cheapened his basically like debut.
I mean, again, I understand why they did it, and I get even the fact that it's like that's supposed to be upsetting, but it is just kind of also like, I think sometimes like I'm usually pretty good at being like, I understand why this is upsetting, like you did all of these things to make this happen. I don't know why in this it feels kind of different to me. Like, it just feels in a way like a little bit too shock value-y to me, but I don't know why. Again, it's interesting to think like, if you didn't have the random cannon fodder Jedi, like if that would have maybe improved it, because it felt like the deaths of these people meant more because they weren't just like one of a number, or if the number of them is important.
I think it's really funny that you bring that up, because I think it's really important that they feel like one of a number because of the way the position that the Jedi have in the world at this point.
Yeah,
they there's so many of them. They are ubiquitous. Like, they are the power.
Yeah, I mean,
so it's like, this is a big like middle finger to that.
Yeah, I mean, it's also a conversation of like the identity of individuals, because they don't really have an exactly. individual identity.
Yeah.
It is essentially looking at this, and this is kind of like maybe a good thing to transition into, but the idea that this plot does kind of go from being very character driven to be yes. very epic saga.
It does.
Which I feel like I have a love-hate relationship with, because mm-hmm. I liked the characters you presented to me and felt kind of weird when I realized it changed to being an epic saga. It makes sense why it is. I totally get it.
It's somewhere
but
in
I
between.
Feel like I was like weirded out, because it feels like we 180'd in the middle.
That's
a little,
true. Yeah. I feel like you can kind of look at this with like a telescope and a microscope in some places.
Yeah, and we're doing two different things.
No, I mean, like, I kind of appreciate that this... I mean, like, I don't know. You do have really fleshed out characters in this show, and I think Mei and Osha are also, like... I mean, they're our main characters, but, you know, they are equally as fleshed out almost as some of your side characters. So, yeah. Like, it is very character-driven, but at the same time, when you do that, it's like everyone's kind of on the same playing field. It's not like... we're focusing in on like I don't know, I'm basically saying what you said in more words, but I kind of enjoy that you can take like a 20,000 foot view or 10,000 foot view or whatever the fucking saying is, you can
many
take
feet.
A wide view of this story and like basically see the symbolic pieces. I adore the fact that Mei and Osha, like, it is hammered home by Seol that like you're not twins, you are one person.
Yeah.
And I think that's so crazy to have like a basically a visual personable representation of the fight between
yeah.
light and dark.
Yeah,
I think that's an amazing concept.
I adore that about
a really
show.
Big concept.
Yeah,
concept, right? Which I think skews the show a little more like epic saga.
Yeah.
A little more like
it's traditional Star Wars.
Yes, very yeah. much so. But then I think you also do have a good marriage of like you also really feel for these characters.
Yeah.
You also like are getting glimpses into their childhoods, their past.
Yeah.
Like, can I... Okay, one note before we move on.
Yeah. I was going to keep talking, but yes.
Oh, okay. I also really am a big fan of how this plot reveals information to you.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like... It feels like you're just... Each time you're getting, like, a clearer view and clearer view of things. Like, I like that we jump back in time in some episodes and we stay there the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only thing I can kind of compare it to is The Witcher, which the first season I went into having like no knowledge of The Witcher. It was so confusing to me.
Yeah.
But which I think could be a detriment to some people. But I mean, I personally like being confused because it makes me feel like I'm figuring shit out.
Yeah.
I felt like the split the difference between like, oh, we're figuring shit out. We're all detectives on this case together. But also like the information that is being revealed is very relevant. To
mm-hmm.
the like, I think it was revealed at the right times. Anyway, I wanted to say that before I forgot.
Yeah,
about
I
it.
Mean, like, I think I'm not a huge Witcher the show fan. I'm not a huge Witcher fan in any sense. I don't like the first season as much as I like the second season, but I think because it is too convoluted,
it is
too
a little
confusing.
Bit, yes, yes.
Whereas, like, I like figuring stuff out with the characters in the show, but like we've talked about this previously, the Fallout TV show I think does a really good job,
amazing
of, like,
job
of like breadcrumbing your way
yes.
through the plot, right? But it's a linearly told story. What was I gonna say? Oh, I think it's
I'm sorry.
No. Fascinating. Back to the point of like character driven versus epic saga plotline, where you're trying to marry the concepts of the original trilogy films
yeah.
with like newer ideas of Star Wars
mm-hmm.
and not that those two are diametrically opposed, but I think it's really fucking hard
it
to
is.
Do
yeah
and not that like and I don't even necessarily think something like Bad Batch really did this, because there were kind of like grander ideas of things, but I think mostly it was
overall,
a very
extremely
character-driven show. Yeah. Small group of characters too. Family, right?
Like, and, yeah, the plot hinges on them being a unit and loving each
and
other
it,
very
and
much.
And it isn't
yeah.
even really like, we're going to save the universe. It's
no.
like, we got to deal with these two guys.
Yeah.
Like, max two guys, you know, two bad dudes, right?
Yeah.
Over the course of three seasons, right? And like, I feel like this show is really interesting because you're trying to be both extremely grand and extremely granular.
Yeah.
And like...
Grand dealer.
It's hard because I think they did it really well, but I think it's I can see why people have really divisive opinions of
yeah.
this. I mean, I obviously have like a very conflicted divisive opinion of this because I want both of these things like separately
yeah.
or to coexist in a different way.
Yeah.
Like, it's hard because I like what they say about the Jedi. I like that you have a lack of identity. They're at the height of their hubris. They need to be knocked down a peg, and you have something evil coming out of that, and you have like an interesting interesting philosophical view of an incredibly philosophical franchise that started that way a billion years ago. Mm-hmm. But you also created a situation where I just want to see what these characters do because you made really good characters. And it's hard, I think, the marriage of those two things. So I get why people are like...
It makes sense why it's a very polarizing
show. Yes, polarizing is a good word. I also think that's why, at least for me, it's hard when we kind of really aggressively switch from character-driven to like big, huge... ideas of the universe driven show. It's a little like it feels bumpy to me.
That's fair. I think they did it really well because when you lose me personally when you start talking about like grand we're going to save the universe ideas.
Oh, same.
I really appreciate that a lot of the big picture ideas that they presented here were pretty like symbolic.
Yeah.
Where like you have May and Osha, two parts of the same person.
I will say, I think that is a really interesting way to do it.
It is. Because I think I would be less enthused about this show if it had become like a, it's the light side versus the dark side and like very like original trilogy, like to an extreme. Instead,
yeah.
Like, you know, instead of like
yeah.
what they had, which is very late. It's a little bit of a thinker, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
which
and I like that.
I also enjoy, and we can kind of use this to kind of
not,
transition.
Not to make myself sound like an intellectual asshole or
me,
anything.
Me, an intellectual.
I'm an intellectual.
You're an intellectual and I'm an empath. But like, we can use this to transition to kind of talk about characters. But like, I do really like the idea in the context of marrying huge grand ideas with character driven ideas.
Yeah.
That what you did is had characters that were representative of grand ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that worked really well. Like, one of my favorite parts of the show is effectively seeing May and Osha as two completely different people. And then as time goes on, they become the same and then cross
yeah.
separately. Right.
I love that they effectively switch places
exactly.
in the end.
They really
like,
do
in so many ways.
Like Freaky Friday. Yeah. Like in the costuming, I love that they switch because May steals Osha's
yeah.
white garb
yeah.
and then Osha is forced to wear May's clothes, which are black. And then it's like you get the visual representation of them switching and then you have, oh, shit, they are switching their ideologies as characters. They've crossed over to the other side.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because and then you realize they're made of the living force, right? Which is another interesting plot thing to come.
I love that Leslie Henlon was like, I see you, midichlorians, and I'm going to put you in this.
And I raise you lesbians.
And I raise lesbians. Oh, yes. Yeah. Sorry, I thought you were talking about May and Ocean. I'm like, that's not, I mean, I guess you could, I don't know.
They're moms.
Yeah. Sorry,
they're
I forgot about that for a
minute. Who are lesbians and created yeah. a child that's two children from the living force.
Yeah.
Damn, I love this show. We need more queer Star Wars. Anyway.
I love that people got like ostensibly kind of angry about it. And it's like, they don't even kiss. Like,
yeah. Also,
or like
it's
maybe
not,
one time they do, but it's just like,
it's not even like, they're not even like, this is my wife. You know, it's like,
it's so minimal it's like, as far as representation like, goes, but it's like what we have.
The lightest way possible. They're kind of together in the fact that this woman made a baby, I guess, and this woman carried the baby.
I mean, they're obviously in some kind of romantic relationship,
yeah.
clearly, but like, yeah, it's I love when people get up in arms. It's like when people got up in arms about like what is his name, the little French guy in Beauty and the Beast who's like Gaston's right hand man.
Oh, LeFou.
LeFou.
Josh Gad playing.
Yeah, when people are like, what is he wearing? Like a wig or something? I don't know. He's wearing something that could be construed as like drag, or he makes some comment in that.
Well,
movie
yeah, he
that...
makes a comment, I think, about potentially being into Gaston.
Yeah.
Because there's a whole song about how everyone loves Gaston.
Yeah.
Everyone.
But I love how it's like, it's giving that like people are getting upset about like,
what's
gay? There's a gay person.
What's so wild
it's like,
to me is that
it's
like,
not even like
I think
front and center at all.
At the beginning of this show, Osha offhandedly says, oh, and my mother's,
yes.
but also she's in a coven of witches and all of the like hierarchy, the women in this are referred to as mothers as
yeah.
though like that's like their rank, right? Is
yeah.
like, you know, Mother Anasea is their biological mother and so is the
quote
other
unquote.
One.
Yeah, as far
but
as
like,
they know.
But like the other ones yeah. are also referred to as mothers.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's not even that she's explicitly being like, hi, I'm Ocean, I have two moms, you know? Like that military yeah. recruiting commercial or whatever. But like, you know, it's like, it's both she has two moms and also like she had women who taught her who were all referred to as mothers.
Yeah.
It's like the lightest queerness you could possibly
oh,
put
for
into
sure.
something.
And people are still going to be mad
and
about it.
And people are still fucking
yeah.
upset about it.
But anyway.
Oh my God.
Cool that was in here though.
Yeah.
Like that.
Oh, we were talking about May and Osha. I was like, what the fuck were we on about?
Sorry.
I mean, we're talking about characters, so it's kind of related. I also really like that. I cannot remember what her name is, but something with a K, maybe?
Mother Coral.
Coral. Yeah.
I remember it because it sounds like Coral, C-O-R-A-L, instead of K-O-R-I-L-L.
Yes. Yeah. Jahira ass woman. I really liked her though.
Yeah, she does remind me of Jahira a little
bit. She's got those Jahira vibes. Anyway.
It's mostly just the voice, but yeah.
And also that she's kind of aggro.
Yeah, true.
Anyway, Mei and Osha, I like how representative they were of the Force. Like, especially at the end of this, like when Osha kills Sol, which is kind of like
I didn't see coming either. I was like, oh my God, she's going to stop.
Really, but like, liked it.
She didn't, and I liked it.
And I like that we have, I mean, an incredibly conflicted, mm-hmm. interesting, nuanced version of the Force, which I was trying to explain poorly immediately after we watched this show, so I'll try to do it again. But like, I like that essentially, right, we have Mei and Osha starting on different sides, crossing and then opposing. And I like that Osha reasonably kills Sol,
yeah,
because he did a fucked up thing. I mean, he's the reason that like her mom is dead, everyone she knows is dead. Essentially, she was stolen as a child, though she mm-hmm. didn't know any of this. She was lied to and all of these things. 100% reasonable, I think, to do that. But also, it was something out of passion and anger and stuff, yeah. Right? It was reasonable. It was justified.
Well, I think it's so fun that like Mei is the one who's like this whole time has been responsible for the deaths of the other three Jedi that yeah. were, you know, part of this party. And then she at the end was like, I don't want to kill him. I want people to see his crime. I want him to go on trial. I want justice. Actual justice, yeah. Right? And then Osha is the one that comes in and is just like, no, I'm going to kill this guy.
Yeah. I it's so good as a, like I was saying, like a representation of the sides of the Force, because I feel like in a nuanced way, because mm-hmm. I feel like always the Force is pitched to us as good and bad, right? These people are evil, they kill people, they're full of rage or whatever, and these people are the good guys and they're peacekeepers and whatever. And it's like, I like that you can change sort of sides, and I also like that it isn't necessarily like this person is morally good and this person is morally bad, mm-hmm. but it's just like the dark side or that part of the Force is just something fueled by passion.
Exactly.
And like, I like that we get to see Osha flip, kill someone, not like because of an emotion, yeah. right? Because of like an overwhelmingly negative emotion, I would yeah. say.
Well, she's just learned that she's been lied to. She's
for
angry.
Her whole life.
She's opening up the wound of grief for her mother again. Yeah. Like, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. It's a reasonable, I get what you're saying. Yeah. Saying it's reasonable. It's understandable, the action that she
yes.
took. Yes.
And I like that she isn't spurred on by that by Khmer. Like, I don't think Khmer is
no.
like, yeah, kill him. Go for it. Do it. You know? Like,
yeah. Which is your typical, like, Star Wars
seduced
representation.
Seduced by the dark
exactly.
side, right? Like, I like that she kind of gets there naturally and, like, again, I like that then when she ignites the lightsaber, we see it changing,
it's
which
so
is like the coolest
cool.
representation of that ever, I think, because I feel like, okay, so in the old canon, it was that different lightsaber crystals created different colors. And mm-hmm. it's just that people who were of the dark side mentality tended to collect and use red lightsaber crystals.
Because they're more volatile or something.
Some
like
shit
that,
like yeah. that. Whatever. You could also technically have a brown lightsaber crystal. Anyway. Thanks.
Shit saber.
Yeah. Thanks EU or AU or whatever the fuck.
I think it's EU.
Extended Universe. It's the European Union.
It's the European. Well, Star Wars European Union.
Extended Universe and I guess AU is an
alternate
universe. There's whatever the Legends tab is on Wikipedia.
What are the Jedi like on Earth 4?
on Earth 4.
Are we on Earth Prime technically to dive into
one.
DC Comics?
It's actually
talks.
Earth 1.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. And Earth 1 is pre-crisis DC. So I'm not going to keep talking about this.
This is a comics podcast now.
You know, it would be if you let me. That's a lie.
Hey, stay tuned.
Yeah.
Maybe.
It's just gonna be me talking about info dumping about comics.
I like it.
But fuck, what was I talking about?
Sorry.
No, it's okay.
Oh, pre, like in way back when.
Oh,
the
yes.
lightsaber crystals.
Anyway, but I like that obviously in the actual current canon, it's just that like the color changes per your like essentially affiliation. It's a mood ring.
Yeah.
Which I think is really funny when you talk about yellow lightsabers and like purple lightsabers. Like those guys are just cool. They're just cool.
I was gonna say, if that's the case, like I love that there's a huge bunch of diversity of colors in the Jedi.
Yeah.
Or on the light side, quote unquote. Can and you- then like the dark. I mean, it kind of makes sense. To have like
there's also less people in the Sith.
Yeah, but like I like the idea that like they're so kind of single-minded about things that like there's not that much room for like openness or diversity of like even the colors that
yeah,
represent
yeah,
them.
That's
kind of fun. That's on theme.
Yeah. But anyway, I really like that we got like a visual representation of like her kind of like fighting, but essentially slowly being overcome by like her passions. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really cool. I like that. And this is kind of what I was trying to explain right after we saw the show. And I was just like, I like that this kind of shows that the dark side isn't people who are just holistically morally bad. Mm-hmm. It is creating the nuance of these are just people who are their drive is like passion, like aggressive passion, yeah, versus people whose drive is maybe something more like justice, mm-hmm, where it's like that could, I mean, that is what May was operating off of for a long time, was a drive for power and then kind of in a way it's vengeance, right? Mm-hmm. But then she flips and it becomes justice. I mm-hmm want these people to serve a punishment that is suitable for their crimes, right?
Or I want to bring that crime into the light. I don't necessarily yeah want to just take revenge for myself. I want it to it's be a learning opportunity. Everyone. I want it to be brought out into the light. I want everyone to know about
it. Yeah, exactly. And I it's kind of a confusing concept, but I like that they've introduced nuance into these parts of the Force, that it isn't just morally bad, morally good. It is what you're pursuing and like what you're fueled by and like those it's different things can represent change.
It's different vehicles to power.
Yeah.
I think it's basically like, it's like channeling all of your, it's like having like a 20 strength and like an 8 in all in like all your other attributes, sure, if you're a Sith.
Yeah.
And then on the other side being incredibly well-rounded with no specific strength being called out if you're like, you know, a Jedi.
Yeah. I also think it's interesting that like killing Sol didn't necessarily make Osha a bad person. Like she's just kind of still the same person.
Yeah, it wasn't this immediate flip of like, ha ha ha,
now
I'm evil.
Now I have a bloodlust. Yeah. Yeah, which I feel like is what we have seen of the Sith.
Yes.
Is like, I mean, even in Anakin, I mean, he was seduced by the dark side for whatever lore reasons, but like, you know, he was an incredibly passionate person and his fears were easily flipped into doing bad shit. But like when he started doing that, he was like,
he went 0 to 60.
Whole hog. Like he was, you know, but like, I think it's cool that it's like, yeah, Osha isn't, I mean, necessarily a bad person. She hasn't lost her humanity.
Well, it's very representative. Like, I don't think Sol is a bad person because he made a couple mistakes, like not justifying his mistakes, but like, you know, it doesn't make him holistically a bad person.
Yeah.
Just like it doesn't make May or Osha holistically a bad person because of the actions that they're
taking. I kind of like, essentially, to like kind of wrap that up, I like that this show creates like the idea that the Jedi aren't a moral affiliation.
Exactly.
I guess
they
are
a religion,
a group
around the Force.
Exactly. Yeah. Like they are an aspect of looking at the Force.
Yes.
The witches, though the Jedi would assume that they are dark Force users, are not evil people. They just have a different understanding and use of the Force. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's a really cool thing to do. And I like that we're kind of seeing that with, yeah, like the show is effectively about nuanced morality.
Yeah.
And I like that. Yeah, Sol did fucked up stuff. The Jedi have been doing fucked up stuff. If you were an outsider and you had this idea of the Jedi that they essentially sold to you, that they're all good guys, you would think that they're all good guys and that their actions are justified. Mm-hmm. But it's actually that they're not justified.
Yeah.
They've done fucked up stuff. And just because someone who maybe has a red lightsaber who killed a dude, but it's like, you did it for understandable reasons. Not saying that it's okay, but it's like there is...
But like
your lightsaber color, your group doesn't necessarily indicate your moral standing.
Right.
Which I think is a really interestingly nuanced thing to put into Star Wars.
Oh, for sure. No, and that's like, I really can sense the like influence of the one person in the writer's room who was just like, I've never seen Star Wars.
I hate Star Wars.
Not hey, but you know, they've never seen it or aren't, you know, a big Star Wars person. No, it's really good. Again, this one just boils down to like, if you make yourself a great writer's room and have varying viewpoints, I think your story is absolutely going to come out much better for it.
Also, like, I think to me, it's a lot more flattering to have a story that fosters conversations like this, even if it's like, obviously we don't always like agree either on the way that it was done or the mm-hmm points or whatever. I think we mostly agree. Mm-hmm. It's just that I like these characters. I mean, I'm slightly annoyed that they died, but like,
yeah.
But it is fostering a good conversation, and one that's really interesting when it comes to the conversation of morality and, mm-hmm, and nuance, right? Mm-hmm. Versus like, we had a movie and there are good guys and there are bad guys. The bad guys were bad.
And they lost.
And they lost. So that's
and
cool.
We're not going to talk about any of the complicated issues.
Anyway, yet. Let's go back to our lives. You know?
No, fully. I think this was really, I like it when people bring in like a universality to really big you know, property names. Like, yeah. I think the first Wonder Woman movie did this extremely well.
Yeah, I like
I mean, I've always been a fan of Wonder Woman. I don't know a whole lot about the comics. I don't read them. But I felt that the Wonder Woman movie was extremely universal because it was like, it boils down to like, humans are really capable of really good or really bad. And like, you know, you have to let, there's no greater power that's going to like make us do one thing or other. It's up to our individual choices. Like, that's an incredibly universal, you know, theme around the human condition, right? And I think that this idea of like moral ambiguity and like, you can really empathize with May and Osha. You can really empathize with like Soul. You can really empathize with a lot of these different characters. So I think it's exponentially more interesting when you have stories like this versus, yeah, the just like black and white, good and bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm a big fan.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really quickly, I did really vaguely want to talk about, I mean, we kind of touched on this earlier, but just like representation in Star Wars.
Yeah, let's talk about that in lieu of talking about more characters, because I think we already kind of covered them. Do you want to do that?
Sorry, what do you mean more characters?
Well, did we move on to characters?
Yes, we did.
Oh, never mind. I just forgot that. Yeah. Okay, talk about representation now.
Hi. Unless there's other characters that you wanted to talk about in more specificity.
No, I think honestly, my two favorites were, I really liked Soul.
Yeah, I did too.
I think he was one of the most interesting characters. And then obviously like May Osha.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're two separate characters, but like kind of the same.
Yeah.
I think that relationship was super interesting.
Yeah. I did really like Soul as well. I really appreciate like the casting in a lot of these. There are just like some interesting characters just in there. I think it's super fascinating that Venestra, who's the green woman, who's like the sort of Jedi leader at this point, mm-hmm. her decisions too that we mostly see at the end of this show, where again it's like, it's very hammering home the sort of hubris of the Jedi of like, she's fully throwing people under the bus,
fully,
instead of taking any sort of ownership over like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't have unchecked power, because
no.
obviously she wouldn't think that.
Yeah.
But it's like, also even the fact that she's wearing this like gown mm-hmm. is so wild to me, because it's like, damn, you guys really treat yourselves like royalty, like yeah. You have the power, you hold the high card essentially. And I think that was an interesting representation of that. But she was fascinating too, because mm-hmm. I feel like she started out as a really sympathetic character in a way, like that she knew Soul really well. And I think like Soul was very much introduced to us as someone who is like soft and caring and cares about children, is very understanding and stuff. And you have this like old-time friend of his,
old-timey friend.
She wears a cowboy hat and says rootin' tootin'. But yeah, I don't know. I like that as we kind of grew to understand like the corruption of the Jedi at that point, like she became kind of a more subtly sinister character. I loved Soul. I loved Soul in this.
Yeah, no, and huge shout out to the actor who played Soul, Lee Jung Jae.
Yeah.
This was his first English language role.
Is it?
I swear I've seen him before. He's been in Squid Games. Squid Game, not Squid Games.
Yeah. That's probably where I've seen him.
No, for sure.
I forgot that show.
I never watched it.
It's not an English language show.
No, it's not. But like, yeah, apparently he worked with like dialect coaches ahead of filming this so he could like do the role.
That's wild.
Isn't that crazy?
I could have sworn I've seen him in other English
and you know what
before.
if I hadn't read that, I wouldn't have known. I've been like, that guy's fluent in English.
Yeah, he's great. He did an amazing job.
He's a really good actor.
Yeah.
I also wanted to shout out Amandla Stenberg, who
yes.
plays Osha and May, and then apparently the people who play the girls who play young Osha and May are sisters. They are different people.
I was gonna say they look almost exactly the same
because they're related.
Yeah, I was like, I was gonna assume they're related, but they did a great job too.
I think she's a really good actress too. She did a great job.
I think overall the performances were amazing.
Yes.
I also, Manny Jacinto is doing.
Oh yes,
so
Manny
much.
Jacinto.
I love that we saw him, and you're like, is that the guy from The Good Place? And I'm like. Yeah, it
he's
is.
He's just so different from Jason.
From Miami or whatever. Yeah. Yeah, no, and like a lot of them, the actors are doing their own stunts and like their
That's
own
so
choreographed
fun. I love it.
Stuff.
I mean, no shade to people who don't do their own stunts. It's a dangerous thing, but
yeah.
like it's fun. When
it's
they
really
do that.
Cool. And like, I that is another thing that's like, I think the show had some like great choreographed fights.
Yeah.
Like it was visually really great.
I love the kung fu of it all.
Oh my
like
God,
the martial
yes.
arts movie. Like, it's so good.
I feel like Wow, we brought something up and then never talked about it. Okay. And we're kind of moving on.
We'll get
from
back
that.
To it.
Okay. We can loop around that last. I really liked how this show had the goof in it a little bit. Like, it had that flavor of campy goof that I always want in Star Wars. And I know we talk a big game about story and narrative analysis, because guess what? This is a narrative analysis podcast. But, like, I really like when stuff is campy. And I like when you marry that with good story. Because, like, this show had it. It had that, like, action movie, fighting movie, fun and funky to it.
I feel like it really brings you back into, like, the realm of, like, older movies, because a lot of the, like, classic, like, kung fu movies are very, like, over the top like that. Mm-hmm. I just feel like it's also, like, it's a different time, so the Jedi's fighting style can be a little different, and, like, I don't know, it all marries together and, like, meshes really well. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, and I really like, I mean, we were looking at reels the other day. There's someone complaining about the sets looking like they're on a soundstage. It's because they are. But
well, it's also because they were meant to look like that.
So I have had a conversation about this with someone I work with, who had a conversation with Leslie Headland recently about this. And the idea,
you're like,
of
twice,
like,
removed.
I know
Leslie
that's
Headland.
Like, gives me absolutely no credibility, and I don't want to, like, just put name drop people. But no. They were having a conversation about The Acolyte, and her words essentially were like, I wanted a show where the sets looked like you could go over and push them over.
Because guess what? That's what a lot of the fucking the OG trilogy and, like, even the prequel movies are completely on a soundstage.
Yeah, I liked that. I mean, especially I would say, like, the forest fighting stuff definitely looked like they'd built on a soundstage, which, like, they had. I would reasonably guess, but I liked that. I think it added a flavor of, like, we were talking about that kind of, like, corny old movie. Mm-hmm. And, like, I had this in our notes earlier, but it's like, I think people are just genuinely afraid of being, like, cheesy, campy, corny, which I think is a shame.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think that is part of the DNA of Star Wars. And I think, like, in the concept of the sequel trilogy, I think when you overshoot that, mm-hmm. and you say, we need to be cool, we need to be the best that there is, mm-hmm. and relevant in, like, ooh, you know, everyone's going
to
love this.
It has to look hyper realistic and all this
shit.
You lose
a lot of the charm, I think, because inevitably this is a thing that was made in 1977, and, like, they used model miniatures to do a lot of these special effects, and, like, it's goofy, it's fun, it's supposed to be fun. So, like, I really liked that aspect of the design and how they pulled this off. And I think they did it in a lot of different, like, areas really well.
Yeah. Did we ever talk about the, like, kind of ending of the show and that last conversation between May and Osha?
We didn't. Oh, shit.
Let's circle back to that.
I'm so sorry.
Besides the plot getting, like, maybe a little bit muddled between episodes, like, 5 and 6, maybe, I feel like the one thing that I would have changed or maybe, like, emphasized a little more was, I would have explained the stakes a little more, because I truly don't understand why May and Osha couldn't both go with Khmer. Yeah. And I understand that the idea might be that, like, May doesn't want to do this anymore. And in the sense of, like, them switching, now it's May who's saying, I don't want to do this. And Osha saying, this is my destiny.
Yeah.
That, I think that could have been hammered home more. They should have had a more cogent conversation about their motivations there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do like that May kind of got her memory wiped, because it's a little bit like, well, Osha found out the truth that May had always known. Like, now it's kind of a switch. Now May doesn't know the truth.
Yeah.
Despite her having known it at one point. Like, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I liked the fact that that happened, and I think it's an interesting setup for the next season, because it kind of feels like May is going to be sort of, like, used by the Jedi.
Yeah.
What I didn't love was, that we kind of created what seems like fake stakes at the end to be like, well, we can't all go together.
Exactly.
And it's like, why not?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, because, like, I almost said Manny Jacinto. Khmer is like, well, if they find May, they'll find you, because they'll be able to, like, go into her memory, or, like, they'll be able to get it out of her. It's like, why don't you just all go together?
Yeah, so they'll both leave.
Why don't you go together and then split up if you really don't want to hang out together anymore?
I don't know. It was confusing.
Like, but also, they seemed like they didn't want to split up.
Yeah.
Like, they were emotional about it. They're like, I'm never going to see you again. And if I do, I won't know who you are.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can stay together.
Just go.
They're not here yet.
Just
it's not like you
now.
Have to make an ultimatum. Like, if you just all absconded and disappeared, they never would have found you.
I think they do say something like, well, they'll find us or something, or, like, I don't know.
It's a big galaxy, man.
But, like, again, I don't think that was justification for, like...
No, that's the only part that I was like, just feels weird.
Yeah.
And again, if you wanted it to be like May really doesn't want to go with Khmer for whatever reason, you got
to
make that
known. I wanted her to say that. I wanted her to be like, I don't want this anymore.
I need you to verbalize your wants and desires so I understand what's at stake.
Because, well, I think she verbalized that earlier maybe where she was like trying to actively get away from him before she knew who he was. Like, it got muddled because we also know that she has a desire to be with her sister. So it's like, what trumps what? Like, I think it would have been a further, you know, pushing of the, like, they've switched sides, basically, or they've switched, like, I don't know.
Allegiances
or character motivations where, like, it's more important to May that she not be under this guy's thumb anymore.
Yeah.
Just like it was important to Osha that she not be confined to this one destiny, right? And so, like, I think pushing that home where, like, I love you, I want to be with you, you're my sister, it is more important to me as a individual person that I'm not being under this guy's thumb anymore. That's not what I want.
Yeah. It's I would have liked maybe some clarification on that.
Yeah, for sure.
Just like a little bit more.
That's like the only thing that I like watched and was like, I don't totally understand that.
Yeah, but that's like, I think, again, like there's a few things I think to me that are a little muddled. That's mostly the one that I think of.
Mm-hmm.
There's some stuff earlier. There's also, this is really random, but there is something that I thought was going to come up again and never came up, which is, you know how early on Sol sees Osha's tattoo that she got and is like, that's new. And then they have like a sort of a dad.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the moment where he's like, you're not Osha.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I would have liked that better, I think, because he just like knocks her out and is like, oh, it's May. I was like, I would have loved if she like, because why would she know that her sister has a tattoo? She's never seen her bare arm.
Exactly.
If she took
her, would have been, even if she like took her clothes, it would have been something she missed.
Yeah. You know? Took her jacket off and Sol's just like, what the fuck? Where'd your tattoo go? No,
fully, yeah.
Like, that feels honestly like a more interesting callback sort of plot point to me to be like, oh, that makes sense why we had that conversation. And also it was kind of like a character development thing.
It was character development because it's like, oh, they're kind of solidifying this relationship of like, he's kind of her dad and like, you know, she's changed a little bit and like, that's cute. But then also it serves the purpose of like a differentiating mark from May. Yeah.
Instead, he just knows, which like, I think it's fine that he like knocks her out and like, is like, oh, this, I'm gonna do some weird, like, I'm just gonna kind of like do like go rogue essentially.
Yeah,
after that. But I'm like, I think that kind of would have been a more fun plot point, but that's the other thing that I think of, and that was kind of it.
Anyway,
that was thanks for remembering that we had a huge thing that we wanted to talk about and then totally
that's like
forgot
the
to talk
only
about
thing that we were like, I don't know about that.
Yeah. And again, like, maybe not 8 episodes, maybe slightly less. You could do a 7. It's okay to have an odd number of episodes, you guys.
Yeah.
Everything like, is either 6 or 8. Yeah, I don't know. I overall liked the costume design a lot.
I liked
the set design a lot. I know I kind of mentioned that earlier. I think it was nice to have something that was like, this is definitely Star Wars, like in the Jedi outfits, but like nice that we got like a different color palette. I don't feel like we see purple a lot.
We don't. I also do really like that all of the Jedi wear the same exact thing, which like is a little bit true in the like Clone Wars era of the Jedi, but like, you know, it's kind of mostly just like the background Jedi wear this because it's sort of the Jedi thing.
Yeah.
Our main characters are different.
I like that effectively the Jedi robes were the same. There are some different pieces in there, like Master Venestra wears a slightly different thing than Sol wears, than I think like Jekki and Yord wear like pretty much the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they're like yellow. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I liked May's costume a lot, the like purple, because it was very like witchy and like the witches are very purple and like, I don't know. Khmer's costume also really fucked. It was like very, just very Japanese inspired.
Yeah.
The pants and stuff. It was really cool. I love that he has his guns out.
I was going to say, I'm loving the fact that he's just like, yeah, I'm hot. I know it.
I love that. I feel like immediately that was a tip off to me to be like, who else would have their fucking biceps out? This guy seems the type.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that, I mean, and again, Star Wars costumes, I think pretty much across the board are always usually very well done. They have a pretty good budget. Unless it's like background stuff. We talked about this briefly in Obi-Wan. It's not a huge deal. But like, you
know. I thought it was fun.
I liked it too. It was very quirky.
I think it really sold the idea that like, yeah, shit kind of sucks now. Like, not saying that it's bad, but like,
yeah,
the pieces looked themselves kind of cobbled together and made out of other materials that maybe weren't originally designed for this purpose, which makes it feel like the universe is like kind of going into like a recession
period. In Obi-Wan?
In Obi-Wan, yeah. Sorry.
No, I agree. I, again, it's an interesting conversation of like, this could add color to the world, or it could be just like a weird last minute thing. I don't really know my feelings on it. The costumes in this were great.
I like
the costumes. I also really like the set design. As I said before, I really liked the like weird apothecary shop we find Khmer in when he's waiting around for May. Mm-hmm. I thought that was just a really fun
set. It felt real Star Wars.
I love just junky cities in Star Wars. And so I love just like, cause I'm a big maximalist stuff eye candy type person. I want sets to be full.
Yeah.
I don't like this newfangled sci-fi. Everything's super clean. Like yeah. I, and even their ship like is super weirdly kind of colorful. And like the Jedi Temple is weirdly colorful, which I think is really fun because it's like in the Jedi Temple, it's the same building that we see in the future. It's just in the future, they have like weird grayish design.
Yeah.
They've really positioned themselves
Yoda
as like, we are monks.
Kim Kardashian's house and was like, I want that.
Yeah. He said, bathroom the size of an Olympic pool.
I want that.
I want it. Concrete? Yes.
Fuck yeah, concrete.
But yeah, no, I think it was a really great show. I enjoyed it a lot. I hope they get a second season.
I'm really excited for a second season because like, I think... Despite the fact that our two main characters have ended up pretty much exactly where the other one was.
Yeah.
So much has happened that like it's like a new journey.
Also,
here.
We have like a reset on one of our characters. So that's super interesting. And we have like the baby steps towards the Sith, right? Because Khmer is like, well, I need an acolyte. To make essentially what it becomes the rule of two.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, what were you gonna say?
And then that creepy, who may be Darth Plagueis. I don't know who that is.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Who's there for like 2 seconds. I've heard people say that like they don't even think that Khmer knows that that thing is here.
On the planet that he's on?
Or do you think that that's like...
I don't know. Maybe not. It
unclear.
It feels like if he was like, there's a monster guy who lives here.
I saw someone saying, I think it was a Tumblr post. I'll see if I can find it, but I can't remember. Saying like that thing has been like... Khmer doesn't know it's there, but when Osha got there, like because of her concentration of like the force, it like drew him out. I don't know. We don't know what that thing is. Creepy as hell.
More.
Oh, I love Khmer's helmet.
Oh, it's fucking dope.
I love that it looks like a fucking creepy ass smiling face with like rows and rows and rows and rows of too many teeth. I love that. It's so
it's
fun.
It's giving, it always...
I don't feel like people let Star Wars be creepy enough.
Yeah. It's giving Batman Who Laughs.
Yes.
Which I think is a fun design. But I like too that you can see where it's been molded back together. I like that the rows of teeth are like metal, like bolts almost, as though it's like kind of part. It's like both an affectation, like aesthetic, as it is part of the structure of the helmet,
exactly.
Which I think is cool.
Yeah.
And I like that it's like he's like, oh yeah, it helps me like... focus solely on the force.
Yeah.
Like, I like that it's got this whole, like, I don't know, lore to
it.
Yeah,
it's got a lore to it.
It's kind of creepy. I don't know. I'm a big fan of just, like, helmets with no discernible eye.
Yeah, those are fun.
Section.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's great. This was a fun show.
This was a fun show. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Also, watch the Khmer going into the ocean with no clothes on scene with the Disney Plus descriptive audio, because it's really funny.
First of all, I love that
his well-toned muscles.
It's so funny. It literally sounds like a romance book, like audiobook.
Yeah.
It's really funny.
It's great.
I also like that we got a scene, and this isn't like, you know, this is just my opinion, but of all the scenes of like, women getting undressed for no reason and like, oh, it's just an excuse to have like a woman in her bra and underwear or whatever, like sexy
in
moment.
In media in general.
Yeah. I feel like, not that this is the answer to everyone's problems or anything, but I like that that was devoid of this, of the woman, but it was like the man. Also,
the man,
like,
is the eye candy.
He's clearly beautiful. Like, he's very handsome.
His well-toned muscles.
His well-toned muscles. Yeah, no. I thought that was really funny. And it feels very much like, I mean, it's kind of a seduction of the dark side, but also like, you know, that was stupid.
What?
I didn't have a point when I was saying
I understand.
Like, it's kind of seduction on many levels.
Yeah.
Because he knows that she's there.
Yeah.
So like, why, like, I don't know.
It's kind of a deeply hilarious thing for someone
to do. It's very deeply hilarious.
And I kind of love it that he's like, I'm so sexy.
Like, yeah, it's really funny.
Ooh, don't you like this? Come hang out with me. You can join me if you like. And she's like, no.
I mean, like, he's trying to be disarming and be vulnerable, even though like his power isn't from like his armor or lightsaber or whatever. Like, so it's like a seduction on many, many levels.
It's so funny to me, if you think about it, that the like original Sith Lord was like just kind of like a dude, bro.
Yeah.
He is just kind of Jason from Miami, Florida or whatever.
But he's like not stupid.
But he's like mean.
Yeah. And mean, yeah.
He's like charming and mean.
Yeah.
Which is probably why everyone really
likes
him. He's
just hot and mean.
He is just hot and mean.
Yeah.
What a great show.
Good show. I liked it.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
We should stop talking now.
We should. We've said all we're going to say.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, that's all for this episode. Thank you so much for listening.
We'll be publishing the first part of a new series where we'll be reviewing select episodes of The Clone Wars. Next week, we'll be starting with the Malevolence arc, which are episodes 2, 3, and 4 of season 1, so tune in for that. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and also on Instagram and Tumblr at The Batch Pod. And while you're here, if you could leave us a review if you like the show and let us know what other shows we should cover.
So if you like story
and you like Star Wars,
then tune in for the next episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Batch. Bye!